This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Birds are a wondrous part of our world. They're doing important jobs like keeping the numbers of insects in check, pollinating plants, and helping make the world beautiful and interesting. But do we need to pay better attention to the birds around us? What is the health of the local bird population? What's happening to their habitat? And what can they tell us about threats to our environment? Call in with your questions and your connections to birds. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And tweet at us at TPR Source. We're joined today by Sarah Beasley, the director of the Mitchell Lake Audubon Center here in San Antonio. Gary Clark is with us. He's the author of the book, The Book of Texas Birds. And John Carger, he's the founder, executive director, master falconeer at Last Chance Forever Conservancy. And welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
So,
thank you.
Sarah Beasley, tell me first off a little bit more about the Mitchell Lake Audubon Center.
Sure. Mitchell Lake Audubon Center is a 1,200-acre wildlife refuge. It is still owned by San Antonio Water System, as it was the first wastewater treatment facility in the city of San Antonio. And with the Clean Water Act, right after that was designated as a wildlife refuge specifically for waterfowl and other birds. And so now the National Audubon Society has a long-term lease and manages that. And we get over 340 species of bird throughout the year, see kids every single day for field trips and environmental education, and so have 7.5 miles of walking and driving trails.
And so this is a key geographic area. A lot of birds come who are on their cross-continental annual journey.
Absolutely. The United States has 4 flyways, which are essentially bird highways. And Mitchell Lake is right along, and Texas in general, the central flyway. And Mitchell Lake is an important stopover point. It's basically a hotel for birds where they get to stop, refuel, relax, and then head on either north or south.
All right. So Last Chance Forever, maybe people have seen the amazing shows that you have done, John, where you have these birds of prey and you've shown how you have. Tell me more about what you do. I mean, you bring these birds back to health. People bring you injured birds and you do wonderful things with them.
A long time ago, I did it because as a young child, my mother taught me that we have a soul and we should rise above those that perhaps don't and help them out. For a long time, that was my mantra, help the animals. Today, it's more important. Last Chance Forever receives 240 to 300 birds of prey a year, everything from a tiny screech owl all the way up to eagles. We're one of the few people in the state of Texas has the knowledge and the ability and the permits to take care of eagles. Today, we receive these birds, and we look much deeper than what we're seeing on the surface. And it is important to me to recognize that my real reason to doing this is that these are indicator species. Not only the birds of prey, but all birds, they're indicator species. So the raptors are at the apex predator station right up next to us. And so Last Chance Forever and receiving those 240, 300 birds of prey a year, we get about 70%. We've raised our percentage rate up this last 2 years. About 70% of them get returned back to the wild. And those that are returned back in the wild are capable of reproducing, and they are capable of knowing what they are, who they are, and associate with other birds of their types.
What kind of birds do you work with?
Everything from the tiny screech owl up through the bigger hawks, all the way up to the bigger owls, and then all the way up to bald and golden eagles.
So if someone would bring a bird to you and that needs recovery, what kind of condition is that bird in?
Some of them are in very poor shape. This time of the year, we're seeing great horned owls, young chick great horned owls. People shouldn't rescue them. We try to advise people to put them back up into a tree or a bush. Even with a small songbird, many times they've just taken a left turn and they're on the ground and mom somewhere trying to talk them back into the tree. But this time of the year, during the spring season, that's majority of what we're seeing. We've finished the spring migration. So the migratory birds that are in right now that are healing, they'll go out in midsummer to fall. They probably will not be released until the fall because they are going back on migration.
Do people bring you birds that maybe they were shot or they got an arrow in them or something?
Unfortunately, we do receive birds that are shot. We more than we like at all. We don't want any of them shot, but we do see it. And it's mostly interaction between humans and the birds in their natural habitat.
And so they just bring you, if they find a bird, they see a bird that's in trouble, do you want them to bring it to you or do you want to go get it? How does that work?
I would rather have them bring it to us. Then I can educate them some and they can see what we're doing and get them involved. That's what my goal. But in certain situations, we do go out and pick them up. If we know they're down and they've got them cornered into a corner, then it's one thing. But it's another thing to just say, I saw a bird on the corner. That's a ghost hunt.
Okay. All right. So let me go. I'll bring in Gary Clark, and he's the author of a book of Texas birds. And this is a photograph rich book. These amazing tales of these birds of we have in the state of Texas, Gary. So, like, what is the scope of the bird situation in Texas? How many different types of birds? It seems to make Texas is just like just rich with birds.
It is rich with birds. First of all, hello, Sarah. I love the Mitchell Lake area. I've had great experiences there. And John, it's good to be on the program with you. Our lives have intersected several times, as you know, at yes. Block Creek, where my wife does photography workshops. I believe currently 648 species of birds have been recorded in Texas. And that's as of February this year. Now, many of those birds, of course, are rarities. They've only shown up maybe once or twice. But roughly speaking, at any one time, there are probably over 600 species of birds in the state of Texas. The only other state that comes close to that would be California. So, yes, Texas is rich. I think that we're rich because of the diverse habitats we have. You have the South Texas brush country, and the Edwards Plateau, where Sarah and John are located. We also have, where I am, the Texas coast, the coastal regions. From a bird perspective, or at least from an ecological perspective, Texas is extraordinarily diverse. We have the Trans-Pecos region, of course, out west. We have the High Plains region and the Rolling Plains region in northern Texas. I mentioned Edwards Plateau and the brush country of South Texas, as it's called. We have the Blackland Prairies and the Post Oak Savannas and the Central Texas and the Piney Woods near where I live. And, of course, the coastal prairies, both along the upper Texas coast and the lower Texas coast. The diversity of habitat brings an extraordinarily diverse species of birds. That's what makes Texas so special.
We're going to get into some of these key bird species that we have, focus in on some that are around here in the San Antonio and South Texas area, also some of the major species that people will identify with across the state of Texas. So callers, are you an avid bird watcher or you just like to have, you have a bird feeder in your backyard? What kind of birds do you see in your everyday life? What kind of questions do you have about birds? Have you ever wanted to become a serious birder or bird watcher? What's the first step? We could talk about how they have some programs that could help you out at the Mitchell Lake Audubon Center. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about birds today. Birds, they're part of our lives, and we're part of their lives as well. A lot of intersection between the two. We can learn a lot about our environment from the birds. We've heard about the canary in the coal mine. Well, guess what? We're all living in the coal mine, and all the birds are trying to tell us something. They can tell us something about the state of our world. And what's happening with our development here? We're losing habitat. We're also adding features here in San Antonio with the Mission Reach and the San Pedro development there as well, San Pedro Creek. So, and what can you do in your own backyard to help help the bird population stay healthy and bring them into your life so that you can enjoy them as well? The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980. And Diane is on the line. And Diane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Great to have you.
We have a fairly small backyard, but it's very tropical. We try to keep it that way somewhat. And we feed our babies every morning. And if I'm not out here feeding them, they certainly let me know because they're lined up on the fence telling me, where's our food? But we keep water fountains, small water fountains, lots of water dishes. And they seem to know us. And my husband and I tallied it up the other day. We have probably close to 21 different species of birds.
What part of town are you in?
Northwest.
Okay. And do you know which, what is your dominant species? Do you know?
The white-winged doves.
Okay. Diane, thank you for calling in. Very helpful for you to hear that. So Gary Clark, what's Diane doing right?
Everything. She has food, she has water, she has shelter. Those are the three primary things that birds need. Diane, I share with you the same thing with birds coming and begging me for food. I have two bluebird boxes, and the bluebirds are raising, they're on their third brood already. They come to the window and they perch on a outside sill and they tap the window for me to come out and give them mealworms early in the morning. So I know about how birds lure us out to feed them. But you're doing everything right, and I hope that more people would do that.
What about cats? Are cats a problem? Feral cats?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, what do we got to know about that?
Absolutely. It's not the cat's fault. It's our fault. Feral cats are, well, let me back up. Cats are wild animals. I love cats. I have a cat. In fact, my cat is sleeping in his little bed right in front of me right now. He stays indoors. He never goes outside. Cats should not be allowed outdoors because they are essentially wild animals that they sort of accommodate themselves to us, but they're not like dogs. They haven't been domesticated. People have only kept cats for about 5,000 years. They haven't yet evolved into animals that are, we call, truly domesticated. So when they're outside, they become the wild animal they really are, which are their predators, and they're skillful predators, expert predators. I've been to Africa. In fact, I'm going to Africa in a couple of days, and I've seen the wild cat from which our so-called domestic cat derives. These animals are extremely clever and smart and capable of striking lightning fast a prey, especially birds. So when people get tired of cats, or they let cats out and cats become feral, they're going to predate birds. Also going to predate lizards and other kinds of wildlife too. But they do predate birds in the millions every year. It is a scourge on birds. It's not fair to the feral cats. They live miserable lives. They get disease. They get in fights. It's just heartbreaking to know what kind of lives the feral cats live. But it's also heartbreaking to know that they're predating, that is, killing and eating millions and millions of birds every year.
All right, back to the phone. Let me go back to the phones line. Sure. So, and AB, welcome to the source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for doing this program. It's fascinating. And I love birds. I've never been a serious birder, but we have young children, one of whom is even more fascinated with birds than I am. So he's a six-year-old. Just wondering if your panelists have any recommendations for programs or events, especially in the summer, but in general, in and around the San Antonio area, you know, geared towards kids to help them learn and kind of encourage their sort of natural interest.
All right. Sarah Beasley is the director of the Mitchell Lake Audubon Center, and I bet you got a bunch of stuff going on.
I do. The one that's coming up most quickly that I want to recommend is on June 9th, we will have a family birding workshop. So it's especially aimed towards parents and kids and getting the entire family outdoors. Also in town, there is a Young Birders Club. And if you contact us, we can absolutely put you in contact with that. But we have tons of summer events coming up soon beyond just family birding. We have lots of Wacky Wednesdays where We'll be doing walks, and all these things incorporate birds. Our goal is to connect people to nature, and we do that through birds.
Now, you have some days. Are y'all going to be like offline for a while at the lake?
We are. We are going to be closed June 17th through July 5th. For some major repairs, that Leaper house that's out there has been there since 2004. So it's time to kind of update some things around. We're also getting some new signage, painting things. We're getting our refresh.
So I know that kids would probably get a lot out of seeing the event that you put on at Last Chance Forever, John Carger. You know, can you talk a little bit about what I've seen? It's been a long time, but I've seen you with the Birds of Prey. Can you talk about that?
Well, the very first thing in our programming that catches people's attention is that we don't name the birds. They have perfectly wonderful names. They have common names and Latin names. And if a child learns the common name or the Latin name, they can communicate with someone across the world. I was in England one time, had a bald eagle on my hand, and had someone from Russia come up and say, "Oh, that's Haliaetus leucocephalus." Well, Haliaetus is fishing bird. Leuco is white. Cephalus is back of the head, of course. So that's the first thing in our program. We sort of, they get an introduction of how to identify a bird by its particular features. So you take, for example, down at the Mitchell Lake area, they've got these, that's the closest southern area that I know of where they're nesting. They've got bay-winged hawks or Harris's hawks. And you can identify them by a ruddy red color down the side of the wing, no striping on the body, black body with a black and white tail when they're adults. They do have some mottling, not striping, when they're juveniles. But when you call them, when you talk about that bay color, that's why they're called a bay-winged hawk. So people can quickly put their eye on it, and it throws them back to looking into a bird book. And then they learn what a bay-winged hawk is all about.
Back to the phone lines with Carlos. And Carlos, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. I have a question. Basically, all the wasps in the neighborhood want to swim in my house, and I'm tired. So what bird do you suggest that I try to attract to the area? Maybe have me?
Okay, so we can barely hear Carlos. He says he wants to know about birds attracting birds to kill wasps. Let me get Tim on here as well. And Tim, you're on the air.
Hi there. Yeah, I guess I had a similar question. I have some field mice in my backyard, and I kind of wanted to know what would be the best way to make a habitat in order to attract owls to my backyard.
All right, so that sounds like a John Carger question.
What I would say is the first thing I would do in your backyard, far enough away to where you can see it, is just build a 4x4 size pile of your bushes that you've trimmed, and maybe, you know, 3 or 4 feet tall. And as it begins to decompose, put your biodegradables there, you know, banana peels and such. It'll attract the mice away from your home and to that area. And of course, you're protecting that area, and the birds of prey will come in there and begin to hunt in that easier area to get food. There isn't much you can do. You can put up an owl house. You're not guaranteed to get an owl, but by providing a safe place for them to hunt, you will attract those species. There are screech owls, barn owls, great horned owls, barred owls that you can attract fairly easily to a city yard.
And is there a type of bird that would be good to attract to try to get rid of wasps? Gary Clark?
Well, yes. Bluebirds, for instance, will attack wasps and eat them. I see that happen in my backyard all the time. There are a number of flycatchers, scissortail flycatchers, which are probably a little more common where you are than they are where I am. They also will capture and eat wasps. They're not particularly backyard birds. But we also have swifts, chimney swifts, and chimney swifts are notorious for scooping up bees. Unfortunately, we have now masonry chimneys, and the chimney swifts can't very well nest in the slick surfaces of masonry chimneys, which has led us to promote chimney swift towers, little backyard structures where chimney swifts can nest. They're great for attacking and eliminating wasps and bees.
Well, even the common mockingbird will eat a lot of wasps.
One
of the biggest problems I've found in the city situation is that chemicals are available to people easily. You can go to any Home Depot, Lowe's, any place like that, and pick up a chemicals to spray things with. And people just think it's sort of like shining your shoes. You know, my shoes look like they, like I'm going to Sunday church, I'm going to shine my shoes. Well, it comes spring, they think they need to spray the trees. What they really need to do is learn to look underneath the leaf. And before you go and spray chemicals there, you can, for example, screech owls will eat wasps. You spray those trees just because you think they need to be sprayed in the spring. You may spray them at the same time those screech owls are beginning to hatch out. And we see a lot of birds with burns in their mouths come from chemical burns because they're catching insects that have been sprayed.
Sarah Beasley, you wanted to add to that?
And birds in general actually consume up to 98% of insect pests. So it's just having birds in your backyard in general is hugely helpful, especially purple martins. You may see purple martin houses around town. We have several at Mitchell Lake, and they also use them at Dos Rios actually to help control the mosquitoes.
Yeah, the one thing about those birds and wasps, to say something good about the wasps, if you've ever seen an infestation of the webworm, go in our center, we'll take a long bamboo pole and open up a web, and almost immediately you will see the wasps going in there and getting the webworms out.
So, but avoid spraying these chemicals on the trees unless the tree is completely infected, or just avoid at all cost, or what
do you think? If you're trying to get rid of pests with chemicals in general, the most common example is, you know, poisoning your rodents. For example, you'd put out poison to catch your mice. The mice ends up not dying immediately. It goes outside. The owl catches the mouse, and then the owl dies. So in general, you know, birds actually have a very sensitive system. That's why they're indicator species. You mentioned the canary in the coal mine earlier, and the reason they took the canary down to the coal mine was because of their sensitive system. And they actually would revive the canary and bring it back up. It was a member of the team. So as an indicator species, it's extremely important not to poison our birds.
Right. And so you, and John?
Can I back up just a little bit to the lady that has the incredible Environ?
Yeah.
I would like to ask her 2 times a year to shut her feeders off for a little bit. And that's the fall and spring during the migration. Birds get here, or they're going here from here north. And when you've got feeders running all the time, you're slowing those birds down that are migrating, and you're changing their migratory paths. And they're really, I would ask her just during the fall. She can get with the Audubon Society, and they can tell you exactly when their fall migration starts and their spring migration starts, and it almost to the day. And if you shut that down just for about 2 weeks during that period, those birds will continue to move on, and you're not going to make them just birds that are depending upon feeders to eat.
Wow, so we're really finding out a lot about the connectivity of all of the animal species that we have, and how one thing can lead to another with the birds, and the birds can impact us. We're going to continue talking about the birding here in San Antonio and at the Audubon Mitchell Lake Center. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call. Although we have full phone lines right now. The number is 210-614-8980. Are you a birder? Do you have a backyard feeder? What's the best thing to be feeding these birds? And what about invasive species? We'll be asking about that as well. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about birds in our world, the bird world, and your connection to it. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And now we're joined by Martin Reed. And Martin Reed conducted a study with the San Antonio River Authority looking at the bird population along the Mission Reach. And Martin Reed, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me.
So what did you see along the Mission Reach? And people may not be familiar with that. That is the expansion to the Riverwalk. It's more of a natural area that goes from the downtown to the historic missions.
Yes, it's an 8.25-mile stretch of the river that's been restored from being a flood control channel to be as natural as possible to back to the original characteristics of the river. And it runs from Lone Star Boulevard down to just south of Camino Cahuiteca, south of 410. And we've been seeing a tremendous number of birds. In fact, we've seen 188 species of birds just within the restored area in the last 2.5 years that we've been doing the survey.
How do you do the survey?
We do two kinds of survey. We do a formal survey following a strict protocol where we stand in the same place each time and we time how long we record the birds and note where they're recorded. And that will allow analysis when we do comparative studies, maybe 5 or 10 years down the line, we can compare the data. But we also do incidental data collection, which is kind of like just bird watching. And we did one of those this morning where we go out and keep track of the more significant records.
What's the most surprising bird that you've seen?
Well, funnily enough, David, just this morning, we had a singing male black cat vireo just south of I-10 on the Mission Reach. This is a species that just today, ironically, has been removed from the federal endangered species list, but it's still on the state endangered species list. So that's a pretty remarkable record just today. We've also had some birds like tropical kingbird, which is really only found in the United States in South Texas and South Arizona. And we saw that maybe a month ago. That's the first time it's ever been seen in Bear County.
How did you feel about the black cat vireo being taken off the endangered list?
Personally, I think it's premature, although I'm not an expert in it, so I'm not speaking from any scientific knowledge on that. But it's a species that was under tremendous pressure from the spread and increase in the number of brown-headed cowbirds, which parasitize their nests. And so I'm glad to see that their numbers have increased, and they have, but much of that's been due to intensive management. And so I think, personally, I'd like to have seen them stay on the list a bit longer until we were really sure they were back to stay.
Is that a bird that was really native to this area, or was it just a stranger, a straggler?
Actually, they used to breed in the northwest part of the county in areas like Crown Ridge and Friedrich Park, and there may still be some pairs there, but my understanding is that the traditional places that people, the public, could go and see them at the very top ends of those areas, because they're a hill country specialist as far as breeding, that they're no longer seen in those areas. So it's become quite a difficult bird to see in Bear County, even though it used to be a native summer visitor to the northwest corner.
Do you share your findings of the birds that you see?
Yes, I do. I post them on eBird, which is a global data collection system, and I also post them on iNaturalist, which is a similar system for every living organism, not just birds.
So overall, when you were told that you were going to have this duty to look at the bird population along the Mission Reach, your observations, have they gone beyond your expectations?
They certainly have. I was expecting to see a fairly good variety of birds, and especially after I did my first visit down the reach and saw how nice the habitat was and how varied it was. There's a mosaic of different habitats all down the river. And, of course, the river itself changes that quite a lot. The River Authority have an adaptive management program where they work with the changes the river enforces along the river, where we have high water events and so on, and they adapt their management practices to fit in with that. And as a result, we've got a mosaic of areas with mostly grassland, savanna with scattered woody trees, areas with thicker scrub, and just starting to see, because it's the early days yet, some more mature trees that will turn into woodland, hopefully.
And so
across that mosaic.
So the Mission Reach was designed to try to restore the natural area that apparently is working at a very high level. And so is there a sweet spot that you think that's the place you get to go to?
Well, there is. There are a couple, actually. I would say my favorite one is the Sakia Park, just above the dam at Davis Lake. That's a beautiful area there. There are some wonderful tall trees that have been there for some time. But then north of there, there's a beautiful meadow with a mixture of mostly grassland and an area with mesquite and other shrubs. And for example, we have Citadel flycatchers nesting there. There's a painted bunting singer on the edge of it. We may get a couple of pairs of those. So that's, and then you can see into the river too, and we can see aquatic birds down there. We'll get a variety of herons and shorebirds just below the dam. So that's a really good spot to go bird watching.
And beyond watching, listening, how's the audio quality of being able to hear all sorts of different birds?
It's very good. Of course, areas near the busy roads, like the freeways, there's some background noise. But even so, you can find good birds. In fact, I found a black cat vireo this morning by hearing it sing.
All right.
But
I'm going to let you go because I got so many other callers. I want to give them a chance to ask their questions and give us their commentaries. Thank you so much for joining us, Martin Reed, with the San Antonio River Authority. He's our consultant on the bird count out there. And let me get Cindy on the line. Cindy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. And
hey there.
Thank you to your panel for all the good work that they're doing. My question today is, can you speak to how, I live inside Loop 410 here in Bexar County, can you speak to how we trim our trees, how that may affect bird habitat? I'm lucky enough to have a lot of trees and have started to leave some dead growth on. That is not a safety issue, but it seems to attract more woodpeckers and warblers. Can they speak to that?
All right, so Gary Clark, and he's the author of Book of Texas Birds. Can you talk about leaving dead growth on?
I would prefer Sarah to answer that question because she lives in that area. And that would be
okay.
A different situation for her.
And Sarah?
Sure. So woodpeckers usually go after the insects that are going to be inside that dead wood. So as you said, as long as it's not a safety issue. The other option you can do is also cut down some of those branches and create a wood pile. And that brush pile actually is another great habitat for birds.
You know, we have a problem with oak wilt, and oak wilt is being spread by a beetle. Is there a bird solution for dealing with oak wilt? Does anyone know? All right.
I think that there's an interaction there, but you know, most of that stuff is underground. And, it has to run into the species of armadillos and skunks. I mean, those are the kinds of things that grub there. That's what they're predating upon, and they're listening for those insects in the ground, and that's what they're digging on is around those roots areas.
So, but this shows you that whenever we start removing species from our environment, that we do have become with these problems because of there is a balance that we have, and one thing will get spin out of control if we remove certain species and we don't take care of, you know, our birds and other like armadillos and everything else that we got here. Let me go to another caller, and this is Yulani. Yulani, welcome to The Source.
Oh, thank you so much. You had a caller just a little while ago who was asking about classes or programs for children, and I'm registrar for the summer program at San Antonio Academy, and we are offering a one-week class beginning June 4th for ages 5 to 7, and the name of the class is called Birds of Prey and Away. And each day they focus on a different bird of prey through crafts and activities and games. But the highlight is that on Friday, the Last Chance Forever Sanctuary visits us. And the kids get to come right up close to the different birds that they bring and see them fly away and come back. It's really a very exciting time for young children to see and be this close to these birds of prey.
All right, Eleni, thank you for calling in with that information. Got an email from Marcia. How do you get rid of grackles? They eat up all the bird food. Gary Clark, any ideas?
No, I wish I did. Actually, grackles, great-tailed grackles that have shown up here are, supposedly you could count them an invasive species. They came up from Mexico beginning at the turn of the 20th century. And have fairly well proliferated throughout Texas and even farther north. They are highly adaptable to urban environments. They are actually field birds, but urban environments, from their point of view, provide them with a field of insects and a field of other kind. And also they're omnivorous, so they'll eat anything that's thrown their way. And the urban scapes and suburban scapes that we've created have provided the perfect habitat for grackles. And as long as they have that habitat, I'm not sure there's much we can do about controlling them.
Are they out-competing other species?
Not that I know of.
Okay, but I've seen like in Austin and other parts of the country where parrots have become obviously they're not native. Is that and I think they're monk parrots.
Monk parakeets is what
monk
they're called.
Parakeets. Yeah. Okay. So, and what's the situation with that?
But they're also an introduced species. Well, in this case, they didn't migrate up here. They were introduced to the United States, and they have formed breeding colonies in several places in Texas. They don't seem to be proliferating, the last I checked, but they're only a nuisance in the fact that they will place their nest, they tend to place their nest in power lines and high power poles. So they're a nuisance to electrical utility companies. Otherwise, I don't find them a nuisance in any other way.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. We've got some open lines now, 210-614-8980. If you got a question about birds, if you got some observations, someone's been nagging you for a long time about a particular bird species and what to do about it, give us a call, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. The source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about birds, and earlier we had a caller asking a question about grackles, what to do about grackles. And Sarah Beasley, director of the Mitchell Lake Audubon Society, you said you had maybe an idea?
Well, it's more that, you know, one person's pest is another person's treasure. People come from all over the world to go bird in Texas, and seeing, you know, thousands of these great-tailed grackles flying is actually an incredible thing that people across the country and the world to see.
Right, so we take it for granted, and we may curse all those grackles up there, but they think, wow, that's fascinating, that's amazing. And John Carger with the Last Chance Forever, you said people could actually push them out of the neighborhood.
You can kind of push them out of your yard. You can, if you put some persistent pressure on them, for example,
like a long
piece of bamboo with a white piece of white cloth on the end of it. You can take 2 2-by-4s and clap them together at the same time and then wave this flag. You'll have the grackles move out of the area rather quickly, but then you need to put some sort of a object there that's going to identify that something scary is there. For example, one of the yellow turning lights that you put on a car, you know, you can put an adapter there and that yellow light comes on. What you do is you turn the yellow light on and then you just go outside and make a lot of noise with these 2 2-by-4s clapping. Don't get your fingers in the middle, otherwise you're going to be yelling and screaming. That might help. But if you take this bamboo pole and flag it, the white linen on it looks like wing movement. And then as this wing movement is around, they're very weary of birds of prey, and therefore you can scare them out of the yard. But you've got to use persistent pressure on them and then tie it into something else.
Well, why don't the birds of prey weed them out?
Well, they do. They do. There's just so many of them that there's no way in the world that you could get rid of all of them. You know, you just don't see it. The raptors take a lot of them. The birds that come in with us, for example, if they're in with us for a 12-hour period, which many times it's many more hours than that, but they'll cast. In other words, they will throw back up the feathers and fur of animals that they've captured. And we see a lot of grackle feathers in the casting 12 hours later of birds that have come in that have been injured. So we know they're eating them.
Yeah, go ahead, Gary Clark.
Allow me to speak to that just a minute. John's absolutely right. But, you know, near where I live, the Houston, in downtown Houston, grackles are so prolific. They are everywhere. They don't seem to be afraid of anything. These fearless birds congregate in huge numbers in the oak trees around City Hall in Houston.
They particularly HEBs.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about downtown Houston with its skyscrapers and its busy thoroughfares and its loud noises, and it's the grackles seem to be impervious to that. Nonetheless, it's a benefit to a particular raptor that John knows about called the peregrine falcon. We have about 8, maybe 10 peregrine falcons that every winter arrive in the Houston skyline, and they tend to spend the winter there because peregrine falcons, of course, are cliff-dwelling birds for the most part, and they see those skyscrapers as wonderful cliffs. So they perch on those cliffs, they spend the winter on those cliffs, and they look down, and they have got, you know, a cafeteria of food in terms of grackles and also house sparrows and pigeons and other things, but especially grackles. So the peregrine falcons that come to Houston in the winter, they just have a great time with grackles.
Is there any health concern about, like, all of the droppings that you get from these birds being in one place?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, what's the concern? I mean, other than the foul odor. Gary? What do people need to know?
Well, It depends on, I mean, if you pick it up and put it in your mouth, you've got some problems, and I wouldn't do that. I don't know. There are differences of opinion about that. I think once the droppings dry up, probably not much harm, except they just create a great mess. But wet droppings can carry certain kinds of parasites and diseases if you come in contact with them.
Okay, back to the phone lines. Let's try and get through these callers. And got Michael. Hey, Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon, Michael. Everyone.
Hey, Michael.
I live in Alamo Ranch area, northwest part of San Antonio. And mind you, my wife is a country girl from Tullahoma, Tennessee, but she really got freaked out yesterday when a baby bird, it looked like a dove, fell out of the tree, and we noticed that its head was missing. I decide to look up in the tree, and I see a bluish-grayish bird with the head in its mouth. And I've seen a few of those, but I do not know what type of bird it is. And before I get off the line, I can make one suggestion. I went ahead and put spearmint herb near a wasp nest, and it seemed to keep the wasps away or some of the bees. So,
okay, Michael, thank you for that. Any...
I may need a little bit more than just blue gray, but I know blue jays sometimes do attack other nests.
I would say what you had was a Cooper's hawk. You know, they're sometimes called blue darters. They've got a bluish gray color, and it's absolutely the right thing to have happen. I hope she was freaking out because she saw something that was incredible. We have got to get back more to understanding how nature really works. And birds lose their heads, birds lose their bodies, they're part of the ecosystem, part of the way it all works. And to have that bird in your yard doing what it's supposed to do says to me that it's doing the right job, taking out the ones that are slower and weaker, and making sure that the checks and balances of the yard are in good shape. I'd be celebrating.
Thank you, John, for saying that. In my backyard, we have a Cooper's hawk that lives, at least near our backyard, and he... takes advantage of the weak birds, especially the white-winged doves that have moved up to our part of the country, our part of the state. And I really appreciate that Cooper's hawk.
I'm making another caller on this, and this is Judy. Hi, Judy. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I actually like grackles, and I have an interesting story about them.
Okay.
3 years ago, I was living in Mackey Park, and I heard all of this grackle noise, but much more like many grackles making all, you know, their usual screeching sound. And I went outside, and I was looking up, and the tree in my neighbor's yard, I could tell that's where all the grackles were, although I couldn't see them. And then just then, a red-tailed hawk flew out of that tree, and all the grackles flew after him. And so they were protecting, I think, their nests. And they did it in a group, and they chased him away. And I just thought that was really, really interesting.
Wow, Judy, great. That's a great spectacle that you saw. So we see the birds. Birds are pretty smart. We call people who are dumb a bird brain, but actually that's calling someone a bird brain. It should be a compliment. Gary Clark?
Yes, the forebrain of a bird, the cerebral cortex of a bird, is as complex as a chimpanzee neurologically. They're extraordinarily smart. One of the clues to that is song. Any species that can utter complex communication, oral audio communication, such as birds, whales, dolphins, these animals are usually evolutionarily or extraordinarily intelligent. So birds are smart, no question about it. I give a program on, it's called Bird Brain, and I discuss how why birds are smart, what makes them smart, what makes them capable of doing things that we're sometimes not aware of. By the way, the activity that the woman was talking about, I'm sorry, I forgot her name, the grackle is chasing off the red-tailed hawk, as my companions on this show know, that's called mobbing behavior. One way to find an owl in the daytime is when you hear a lot of jays gathering around and squawking around a tree. In my neighborhood, that's a signal that there's probably a barred owl in that tree, and usually that's correct.
Okay, the other caller, this is Marty. Marty, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I just was curious. When I was a young girl, I remember going to going with my mother to her friend's house. And in the backyard, now they lived out in the country in Goliad, but that she had this structure. It had a roof, but the sides were only like chicken wire or something. But and it was about, I'd say, 5 to 6 feet. A full-grown man could walk in and not have any problem. But she just had the, it had no door, but every evening the doves would come and roost in this place, and it was wonderful sitting on her patio and listening to the doves coo. Now, did she start out? I mean, how do you get them to start doing that? I mean, if I made a structure, how would I make them come?
All right, Marty. Gary Clark, author of Book of Texas Birds. Have you heard of something like that before?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
It seemed like that they had a structure that they had built in their backyard, kind of like a large bird cage, but not enclosed, in which in the evening that birds like doves would come in and roost at that location.
And coo, correct?
Yeah.
She's about to coo? Yeah. Okay. That's fairly normal. Doves particularly like to roost in sheltered places, such as she's talking about.
How do you start that process? Sarah, have you done something like that before?
We have not. It actually reminds me a lot of, New York City, where they have the kind of cages on the top of the buildings. But the best way would to be start attracting the birds to your yard, either with, bird seed or ideally with native plants. And we can identify different plants that different birds enjoy. And then, of course, if you set up the structure, they will use it.
And so, John Carger, what could someone start to do in their own backyard to enhance the habitat for the birds?
I would say what she's seen, I've seen many times, that what you've got to do is just something that where they feel safe in it. And also water. Water is very important. You can put out a lot of food, but if you've got a good, clean source of water that's moving, in other words, you have it rotating in and out, circulating about, you can attract a lot of birds, and those doves are coming in there because exactly what he said, they're coming in for a place to sit and be underneath something where they're not going to be predated upon. And I've seen that happen before with diamond doves and with regular white wing and the common dove.
All right. I want to thank all of our guests this afternoon. Sarah Beasley, director of the Mitchell Lake Audubon Center. A lot of events coming up this summer. Gary Clark, he's the author of the Book of Texas Birds. John Carger is the founder, executive director, master falconer at Last Chance Forever. This is The Source. Thanks for tuning us in.